Hi, Ariel. How are you?
Great, thanks. I actually had a few questions, so bear with me here for a second. My first one was about your role this coming Saturday. I know you're going to be in Wales at the same time as the Grand Prix event in Chicago. First off, why did you choose to go to Wales as opposed to being live in person in Chicago for probably what is the biggest night in the history of the IFL?
Good question. I really struggled over that decision, but at the end of the day, I had no decision because it was a commitment I had made prior to joining the IFL. And when I came on board, I told Gareb Seamus, our CEO, that I had this outstanding commitment that I had to fulfill it. So coming on board, and that was prior to us having locked the date down for our live broadcast. We had November 3rd locked in Chicago, but it was not going to be live. And since it was a taped show, I didn't feel the urgency to be there when weighed against the commitment I had made to be in Cardiff. It later became a live show and then created a dilemma for me. So certainly, I have a tremendous history in producing live television, and I really wanted to be at our first live show. But at that point, I was too far committed to Sports Network in the UK and HBO to fulfill that show on November 3rd in Cardiff. So it's been a very difficult few weeks in terms of logistics and trying to split my schedule. Once the show is over in Cardiff, I'll have the relief of being able to focus 100% on what's happening here.
So that said, moving forward, will you not be working on any more boxing telecasts from now on?
I don't expect to, no. Certainly not, in an on-site capacity. I'm full-time here at the IFL and enjoying it, and it's just part of the transition. because prior to coming on here and after leaving Showtime, I was still very involved as a consultant to several different boxing entities, and I was at the IFL as a consultant as well prior to coming on as a full-time employee. So all of those commitments have been fulfilled, with the outstanding exception of November 3rd. And once I get that one done, I can relax a little bit.
A few weeks ago, you had mentioned that as far as 2008 goes with the television deal, that the IFL was pretty much secure to be on a network. I haven't seen any news of any formal announcement. Has MyNetwork TV told you that they're going to wait to see how this coming Saturday's event does and then take it from there, or is something in place and you're just waiting to announce it?
Well, we've had extensive conversations with MyNetwork TV, and although there's nothing in paper, we're very comfortable that we'll be announcing a continuing relationship with them. Right now we're in the position of crossing T's and dotting I's, and we are certainly all looking at November 3rd with a lot of expectation and a lot of hope that it performs well. But the thing to remember is that ratings are only one way to judge the success of an event. Television ratings are only one way to judge the success. The ratings indicate how many people are watching, but what they don't indicate is who those people are. And that's as much a part, if not a bigger part, of the success of the show than the actual hard numbers. So everyone is watching it. A good sign, a very good sign of the success of this show is that MyNetwork TV has sold out the commercial inventory for the first time on a MMA show. And we believe they sold out those commercials mostly because it's a live show, and we think it's being received well by sponsors because of that. So all signs look good, Ariel. Everything is going in the right direction. We'll certainly know a little bit more on Monday morning after the weekend. But we have every reason to believe we'll be going forward with my network.
I just have a few more, if that's okay with you.
Sure, take your time.
As far as December 29th goes, is there any deal intact for that to be aired live on MyNetwork TV, or are you still waiting for that as well?
Yeah, that decision hasn't been made yet. It will be on MyNetwork TV in some format, either live or tape delayed. We are hoping it will be live. And those discussions will begin immediately after the November 3rd show.
I'm sure you're aware of the talks between the UFC and HBO. They pretty much have fallen through, and nothing's going to transpire from that. With your history in the world of boxing and your relationship with the folks over at HBO, is there any interest of trying to reach an agreement with airing IFL fights on HBO to try to maybe, you know, neutralize Showtime's foray into the MMA world?
Well, you know, I don't like to comment on other people's business because I'm not on the inside, but, you know, I don't know how well the Showtime shows are going. I wish them well. I hope they're doing well. I don't have any indication of whether that's an impact on anybody else's business. However, I'm a firm believer in a high tide rises all boats. And I think that MMA having a success anywhere, be it Elite on Showtime or be it UFC on HBO or whatever, is very good for MMA. And the more successful MMA events that are out there, the better it is for the health of this sport in the long term. So I support, to the extent that I can, as an officer of a public corporation, I support the success of MMA on Showtime or HBO or any place else, or Spike, whether it's UFC's success, whether it's Elite success, I don't care. I want them all to do well because it's good for us as an industry. Now, as far as IFL on HBO goes, I've had some preliminary talks with the folks over there, some casual talks. I'll be with them this weekend in Cardiff, and I hope to pick up the conversations again. I can't tell you their level of interest in MMA. It would be inappropriate for me to say that, and that's much better coming from them. But I'm certainly exploring that, and I will say this. I don't know the reasons why the UFC-HBO fell apart. I've heard rumor, and I'm sure you've heard rumor, and my rumor may come from a higher source than your rumor, but it's still rumor and I can't comment on it. But I will say that whoever let that deal fall apart, for whatever reason, made a major mistake.
Okay.
An enormous mistake. Because MMA on HBO would have given it huge credibility on an international scale, and it would have elevated the entire sport to the mainstream fan. So whoever let that deal fall apart for whatever reason did a tremendous disservice to MMA.
Just two other questions. The first one was with regards to Kurt Angle. Made huge headlines just a few weeks ago when he was sitting in front row of one of the IFL events. Is there anything new to update on his talks about potentially working with the IFL in some capacity in the future?
Not really. Good question, but there is no update on that. I have heard, correct me if I heard wrong, I heard he made a deal with Elite.
He was on our radio show, and he hasn't made a deal with Elite. The last we spoke to him, which was last week, he mentioned that he had set his sights on the IFL. He loved everyone over there. He liked the way that they were going to allow him to still wrestle but coach at the same time potentially. So nothing has transpired between him and Elite, and I don't even think they've spoken in a long time, according to my conversation with him last week.
Well, we would love to have Kurt Angle over here. He's a terrific name, terrific wrestler, but we also have a overriding fiscal responsibility to the company, and there are some events that we have to look at from a business perspective and say, you know what, love to have that, but it doesn't really fit in with what we're doing right now, and it may not make its money back, and therefore would have to pass on it. Now, some fighters come under that description. You know, there are some fighters who, yeah, would love to have on this air and may still eventually have. But right now, we're trying to stay within our format and be, you know, as fiscally responsible as we can to the corporation.
My final question was about the IFL ring, and your organization is really one of the last in North America to use a ring as opposed to a cage when holding MMA events. Have there been any talks about having the fights in 08 in a cage to try to create some uniformity within the sport, or do you guys like the fact that you're just a little bit different than everyone else?
Well, the latter is correct. We like the fact that we're a little bit different from everyone else. We do acknowledge that the standard is becoming the octagon. You know, that a lot of fighters are used to fighting in there, and we're aware of that and acknowledge that. And we're looking at, you know, what it means to us that many fighters train for an octagon. We have no announcements to make about, you know, changing our format at this time. Who knows? We may not. I don't know. I could tell you one thing. I personally do not like the cage. I don't like it for many reasons, but from a logistic reason, as a television producer, I don't like how difficult it makes it to get the good clean shot with the camera. It's very difficult to shoot over the top of that thing and shoot through the cage to get the shots that I like on television. So I don't like it for that reason. I also fundamentally am uncomfortable with human beings fighting in a cage. I know we've gotten way past that as a sport. I know we've gotten way past that with the fans, and I know there is a certain dramatic value to it, and there's a certain visceral value to it. But, you know, I hearken back to the first MMA event I ever saw. It was a UFC show in Las Vegas, and I saw that cage, and I really had a hard time with it. Now, that was a long time ago, and the world has changed, and I've certainly changed. My opinions have changed, and I'm more educated about the sport than I was then. But I just have a visceral gut reaction against the cage. Now, you know, that may upset some fans. It may anger some people towards me, because a lot of the fans love the cage. But I'm being as honest as I can, and I'm not ruling it out.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the way the Ben Rothwell and Mike Whitehead situations played out, especially in the media with their agents, Monty Cox.
Okay, as to what went on behind the scenes, I can't really comment on that because a lot of those things are protected by confidentiality agreements in the contracts. I will say that it began, I think, with a series of miscommunications and escalated to a point that it really had no need to escalate to. At this moment, there seems to be calm. The waters have calmed. Our relationship with Monty is a good one as a major supplier of fighters, a major agent in this industry. However, Monty's role has just changed significantly with his new position at M1. Ben is a part of IFL, certainly in our growth stages, and we expect him to be at ringside on Saturday night in Chicago. He asked if he can come, and we said, absolutely, would love to see you. So, you know, unfortunately, what happened with us and his, is Monty his agent, his manager, whatever, his representative certainly, got into the press, and it shouldn't have. And I know I don't like negotiating through the press, but it escalated, we stopped it, it's fixed, and we hope to go on and have a good relationship with Ben and Monty.
With Monty's new position within M1, are you concerned that he's now going to take his fighters who will be free to look elsewhere come January 1st now to hit the new M1 organization? Or have you guys actually, is there anything that you can tell us about, you know, contract negotiations as far as re-signing them for the upcoming season and beyond?
No, there's nothing I can go into on that. And as we keep saying, I don't like discussing contracts in the press. I don't like using the press to get my point across to whoever we're negotiating with. And we like to make announcements as fait accompli. You know, when something is done and official, we'd like to make that announcement and comment on it. And certainly, you guys will have an appropriate question in the process of a negotiation, and you deserve a respectful and honest answer. Sometimes that answer has to be, I can't comment on that. Because of the delicacy of a negotiation and because of contractual obligations not to talk about it. So I really can't go into that, but I can tell you that Monty is a very respected representative in this industry. He represents a lot of talent. We hope to, access some of that talent. I imagine he's going to want to bring talent to M1, but he's also in a sticky situation. He has to be careful where he does it and how he does it. As an executive of that company, he's a promoter, and as a manager, he has certain conflicts of interest that he has to be aware of as he goes forward. There are some states that will not allow a manager to be a promoter or a promoter to be a manager. MMA is not part of the Ali Act. However, the Ali Act expressly prohibits promoters from being managers and vice versa in the boxing world. As I say, this is not covered by Ali. However, a lot of states follow Ali as a rule and may find it difficult to have a manager who is also a promoter. So Monty has his work cut out for him as to how he goes forward. And as I keep reiterating over and over again, we want him to succeed. We want him to succeed with M1. We want him to succeed with his fighters. We want him to succeed with fighters here because it's healthy for everyone. Everyone's success in M1 makes a healthier sport. Everyone's success in UFC, Elite, all of them make a healthier environment for MMA. So I've never met Monty. I've never spoken with him. I'm only here a month at this point, but I'm certainly aware of his influence and impact in the industry, and I want to have a good relationship with him.
My final question of the day, I promise, is with regards to Dana White, who's been very vocal about former boxing promoters getting into the MMA world. He's oftentimes even mentioned your name and Gary Shaw's name as people who can potentially, quote-unquote, turn MMA into what boxing has become. I'd love to hear your thoughts on his comments about former boxing promoters, executives now venturing into the MMA world, and whether or not you obviously don't agree with his take on your influence in this sport now, but whether or not that irks you a little.
No, it doesn't. First of all, I've got kind of thick skin. I've been insulted by very formidable people over the years. So I'm not too concerned about it. I think what Dana was expressing was a concern that there are professionals coming into this industry. And up until now, he's had virtually no experienced promoters in the environment with him. Gary Shaw and I have done a lot of business together over the last 25 years. And I could tell you Gary is a formidable promoter and a formidable negotiator. And Dana would be correct in being concerned about the competition that Gary brings to him. And if nothing else, it raises the bar. It raises the bar because you've got other people seriously negotiating for fighters. If you look at UFC now, they have issues with their fighters, and I'm not, giving any information that you don't know because it's public. A lot of the managers and agents are becoming much more financially savvy and to the industry and how pay-per-view works and are asking for more money. And, the entry into the sport by guys like Gary Shaw brings in a new level of competition that can, in fact, raise what the fighters are getting paid and what they're demanding. On the one hand, that's not good because it's harder to keep fighters. On the other hand, it's very good because the fighters are the core of the business. When people go to see a UFC fight, they're not going to see Dana White. When they go to an elite, they're not going to see Gary Shaw. And when they come to IFL, they ain't coming for Jay Larkin or Kurt Otto. It's about the fighters. So the fighters have to be taken care of. The fighters have to be compensated appropriately. And if the entrance of guys like me and Gary to this thing herald a better world for these fighters, then so be it. I don't know Dana personally. I've read some of his comments. I read a story that says that he came to my office years ago to try to sell UFC, and I passed on it, and now I'm trying to get involved. And, well, you know, first of all, I don't remember it. I don't remember meeting him. And I'm told that, he's a memorable presence. But that was a very different time. It was a different time in television. It was a different time in the cable world industry, where cable could not carry what UFC used to be. There were too many issues in Washington. There were too many issues of violence. And the cable operators didn't want to touch it. They didn't want to go near it. So I give UFC all the credit in the world for refining the sport to a place where it was digestible by the cable companies and satellite companies. A lot of that credit goes to Frank and Lorenzo Fertitta. Lorenzo is an old friend, and I know him to be exceedingly bright and an exceedingly good businessman. And I believe that when Lorenzo and Frank took the UFC, it was a major, major turning point for the sport and for the industry. They've done much to make this a broad appeal sport. And prior to their coming on board, you know, having been in cable, I'm telling you, cable wouldn't touch it. I tried. I actually saw a future here and went to the operators back, I'm talking 10, 20 years ago, and they just couldn't bear to put this on the air. To prove, emphasize that point, there are no national sponsors on UFC. You know, they're to this day, as successful as they've been. You know, if you're Pepsi-Cola or General Motors or Ford Trucks, you don't want to see your logo on the mat splattered with blood. You know, your customers don't want to see that. Your shareholders don't want to see that. So it still has some taboo associated with it. Whereas we tend to be a little more broad-based in our appeal. The other great thing that UFC did, and speaks to what Dana's comments were about boxing guys coming into the business, they went out and recruited one of the most visible and well-respected boxing guys in the world to represent them with all the various state commissions. And I speak of Mark Ratner. I have 20 years of history with Mark Ratner. And when they hired Mark, they boosted the credibility of their business and the sport by light years. So it's kind of difficult for someone like Randy to criticize boxing guys getting into the business while at the same time they went out and hired one of the most visible and respected boxing guys in the world.